A whole gang of media snoopers, including Jonathan Marks, scans from D.C. to daylight every Thursday here on Radio Netherlands. Their super-duper whopper-doppler receiver gizmos pick out the essence of what's happening in the world of international broadcasting. Radio Netherlands, we have the technology.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online. Just about to push the button on another program from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
This is the Dutch International Service, Radio Netherlands. Media Network, the weekly communications magazine for shortwave listeners. Produced and presented by Jonathan Marks.
Hello there and welcome to this latest edition. We've a definite date now for our first shortwave feedback program, in which we'll be looking at some of the reaction to the phone-in program at the end of May. We'll be announcing the names of the winners and taking the discussion further next Tuesday, July the 7th. But let's start today with Media Roundup, and for that I'm joined by Pete Myers.
At the end of last week, cuts were announced in London by the British government in its funding of the BBC external services. It's not the first time that the BBC has been under attack. Previous governments have proposed very drastic measures, but very few have been finally implemented. But now the Conservative government has made its measures public. Yesterday afternoon, Jonathan Marks got in touch with Douglas Muggeridge, managing director of the BBC External Broadcasting, and asked him for some background to these latest cuts.
This time, the government are asking us to cut 8 services in all. The services concerned are the French for Europe, the Spanish service for Europe, the Italian service, the Portuguese service for Brazil, the Somali service, the Maltese service, and very importantly, the transcription service, which, as you may know, is the department which sells the best of British radio programmes around the world.
Does this mean the transcription service is going to disappear altogether?
That indeed is the intention of the government at the moment. They are withdrawing the funds which go to pay for that service.
And what sort of funds does that amount to?
In the case of the transcription service, it is about £1 million. Overall, the revenue cuts that they're asking for in terms of these services comes to £3 million a year. Of course, I think, to be fair, one must make it clear that what the government is saying, that in exchange for these revenue cuts in services, they will give us more money for the capital program for transmitters. In fact, I'm afraid the reality of this is that the money they're giving us is simply to maintain and renew old transmitters, and in fact represents almost exactly the amount of money they took away from our capital programme 18 months ago.
Does the British government decide which languages the BBC will broadcast in?
Yes. As you know, the BBC External Services is editorially entirely independent and is very much a part of the rest of the BBC. The only control the government has over it is to say in what languages we broadcast and for how long.
And what dates are these cuts going to be implemented, if they are?
Well, if the cuts are implemented, that will have to happen by the beginning of the next British financial year, that is in April of next year.
And in the meantime, presumably, you're going to fight them, are you?
Well, indeed. Our purpose is to try to persuade the government that they are making a very sad mistake, because we believe here that to cut this number of services would very seriously damage the reputation and standing of the BBC's external services throughout the world, and indeed greatly reduce their effectiveness at the very time when the majority of major international broadcasters are increasing their effort.
I can understand why you can be worried about transmissions, for example, in the Middle East. But what about the services to Europe? Isn't that a way to save money on shortwave?
Well, we believe that it will be a false economy. We believe it is extremely important to continue to broadcast to your friends as well as to perhaps certain countries, for example, in the Eastern Bloc, who are not as well disposed towards you. We think that if you are not able to broadcast to friendly countries, this begins to give you the image of being a propaganda service, and that, of course, is precisely what the BBC is not. Secondly, of course, from the point of view of the European countries concerned, France, Spain and Italy, we believe it's awfully important that the British case, as regards EEC affairs, and, of course, in terms of other British affairs, such as Northern Ireland, should be put to these countries. For example, the French service has an audience of 2.25 million, and that is a substantial number of people, and a recent survey has shown that it includes a large proportion of young, informed, educated people, and we think that's a very important audience to get to.
Douglas Mugridge of the BBC. A third international group of shortwave listener clubs has just been formed with the founding of the South Pacific Association of Radio Clubs, or SPARC, and this is to be based on similar lines to the European DX Council and the Association of North American Radio Clubs. The clubs involved are the Southern Cross DX Club and the Down Under DX Circle in Australia, the New Zealand DX Radio Association, and the New Zealand Radio DX League. SPARC intends to publish a newsletter to be circulated to the clubs within the organization and the EDXC and UNUC. Competitions, country lists, and methods of promoting shortwave listening in the South Pacific are being planned. And for the time being, the contact address is SPARC, P.O. Box 1313, Invercargill, New Zealand. And it's expected that other clubs in the area will seek affiliation.
Some interesting frequency news now. In the latest bulletin of the International Frequency Registration Board, El Salvador has made some new registrations, all between 4 and 14 hours GMT. The frequencies listed are 5990, 6080, 9520, and 9585 kilohertz. All the transmissions are listed as 50 kilowatts. There's no guarantee that they will ever appear, but it might be an idea to watch those frequencies.
Likewise, looking ahead to September, Norway has decided to add another 11-meter band channel to its schedule. Between 11:30 and 12:30, you'll find them on 25615, as from September the 6th, and for 90 minutes, starting at 15 hours, they will use 25615, which is new, in parallel to 25730 kHz, which is already running. Swiss Radio International is also joining 11 meters as from November the 1st. 25780 is their chosen channel for 3 hours, starting at 10:30 GMT.
The BBC Monitoring Service notes that independent sideband emissions carrying Radio Moscow domestic service programmes have been traced in the middle of the 19-metre shortwave broadcast band. 15225 kHz was noted one evening at 20:30 GMT, carrying MIAC material on lower sideband and Radio Orbiter 4 on upper sideband. A similar type of emission was noted a few days later at 15:30 on 15270, though the reason for it is still unclear. Meanwhile, in Indonesia, the information minister made an inspection tour of a new transmitter site some 50 kilometres south of Jakarta, where three 300-kilowatt transmitters are being constructed with the help of technicians from the United States. Tests are expected to start this month and be fully operational by mid-August, but it's not known whether these transmitters are for the external shortwave service. And now to two late items from today's issue of World Broadcasting Information from, again, the BBC Monitoring Service. Yesterday, the Voice of Turkey added four new languages to its output: Albanian, Hungarian, Russian and Chinese, making a total now of 15 languages. And on Tuesday night, the clandestine Voice of the Malayan Revolution, widely heard in Asia on shortwave, said its goodbyes and signed off for the last time. The station said it will be replaced by a new station, the Voice of Malayan Democracy. But so far, this hasn't been traced. So, a DX target there.
News of two publications now. The first is an 8-page pamphlet entitled How to Choose a Receiver, compiled by the Association of North American Radio Clubs. It gives you a guide to receiver specifications, and there's a very useful section on the manufacturers and equipment suppliers, primarily in North America. A useful complementary guide to what we're trying to do with our Radio Netherlands receiver shopping list. The guide costs $1 in North America, $1.50, or 5 IRCs outside, and you'll get it from ANARC, A-N-A-R-C, 1500 Bunbury Drive, North Whittier, California, and the code is 90601 USA. The second publication is a paperback book entitled Better Shortwave Reception, authored by William Orr and Stuart Cowan. The fifth edition has just appeared, and Jonathan Marks has been reading it through.
Well, it's always difficult to find a cheap, readable book as an introduction to shortwave listening. This book goes some way towards that, though not all the way. In 160 pages, the authors cover the radio spectrum, propagation, receiver advice, antennas, some accessories, and there's even a glance at the bands further up than 30 megahertz. The original book was written back in 1957, and although there has been a lot of updating, there are still a few points which show the age. For example, Chapter 5 is entitled Receiver Alignment and advises you that even if your set is new, it could do with a little peaking up by fiddling with the intermediate frequency transformers and watching the S-meter. Well, that may have been the case 15 years ago, but if you take the back off a modern synthesized set and start aimlessly fiddling, you'll knock the whole set out of alignment, and we doubt if you'll ever be able to get it back. Circuitry has now become extremely complex, and unless you have a lab of test equipment, leave well alone. There's a slight radio amateur bias, and curious names like Radio London pop up instead of the BBC World Service. But I think it's wrong to pick too many holes in a book costing $5.95 in the USA. With a few reservations, that makes it good value, especially for the beginner living in North America. You can get more information by writing to Radio Publications, Box 149149, Wilton, Connecticut, zip code 06897, 06897, USA. And the book is called Better Shortwave Reception. It's also mentioned in the Radio Netherlands book list, available from us free of charge. You're listening to the Dutch International Service, Radio Netherlands, and our weekly communications programme, Media Network. Well, we've had a few letters over the past months drawing our attention to ethnic stations in various parts of the world and the availability of foreign language programmes in some of the holiday resorts on the local radio. Spain is popular for this sort of thing. Both Finland and Denmark have an English news bulletin on their domestic service. Austria has started a multilingual FM station in Vienna called Blue Danube Radio. And even Bulgaria has a news bulletin in English and German for visitors to the Black Sea coast. In this respect, the Netherlands is a bit behind, though this might change in the future. Australia, on the other hand, has taken a much more positive stand towards serving people whose mother tongue is not English. About 25 years ago, there was a spate of migration from Holland to Australia, which is why we have quite an enthusiastic Dutch-speaking audience to our programmes in that part of the world. But is it really a good reason for broadcasting on the home front on Australian domestic radio, in Dutch? I put that question to Theo den Brummela, who's head of the Dutch output on an ethnic station, 2EA, in Sydney, Australia.
It's very simple, of course, and because there are so many Dutch or ex-Dutch people living in Sydney, in Australia, and in Melbourne, and in Adelaide, and in Brisbane, wherever.
So you've got these various stations around the country broadcasting in foreign language, is that right?
Well, our station broadcasts in 47 different languages, from 5 o'clock in the morning till midnight.
And is it a commercial station?
No, it is a government-funded station, run by the so-called Special Broadcasting Service.
And how many hours of that broadcasting day is in Dutch?
3 hours per week, on Sunday morning, on Monday morning and on Thursday afternoon. Sunday is mainly an informative programme with a lot of news from the Netherlands and Europe in general. Some news from around the Dutch language clubs around Sydney and Newcastle and Wollongong, which are two major population centres near Sydney. Some sport news from Europe, and then a lot of variety, and we end up with a meditation. On Monday, we direct our programme mainly to the elderly, and therefore it is a nostalgic type programme with little talks by Radio Nederland Wereldomroep. Thursday is a sort of drive-time programme. It's late in the afternoon, people are on the way home.
Have you any idea how large the audience is in Sydney to the Dutch programme?
The Dutch programme is very difficult to estimate, of course, but we have a potential audience of about 36,000, and we assume that up to half of them listen.
This is Radio 2EA, a station of the Special Broadcasting Service. Our next programme is in Dutch.
U luistert naar het Nederlandstalige programma op Radio 2EA. Radio 2EA is het Sydney-station van de Special Broadcasting Service.
You mentioned that there are other stations around the country. Is there some sort of network at all?
Not yet. We're trying to achieve that, but at the moment we haven't got that far. So we have a station 2EA in Sydney and 3EA, which stands for Ethnic Australia, in Melbourne. And then we have a station in Canberra, in Adelaide and in Brisbane and in Perth, and several smaller ones in the country. But they are more public stations. I don't know if you know that system. Public is a station where a group of people come together and start their own radio station with permission from the government. And that's more commercial.
And what sort of budget do you have for the whole programming?
Well, that's one of our most difficult things. The ethnic station originally worked with volunteers only. But now we've been going for 5 years. The pressure is on to get some payment. And in fact, the Dutch program gets something like $600 for a fortnight. Which isn't terribly much, really.
And do you broadcast on medium wave and FM as well?
No, only AM.
Theo den Brummela speaking from Sydney. Well, our Dutch language transcription service is now expanding to cope with the ethnic interest in Australia and elsewhere, as Wim Graaf, who's a producer with this section of Radio Netherlands, explained to me.
Yes, it is expanding. It started in the beginning of the 70s. And we started with one station, and after 75, we got two more, and at the moment we have 10.
Right. Now, why should people want to broadcast in Dutch in Australia?
Well, some of the stations even carry 40 different languages, which means that Australia is a multicultural society, one of the most important things. Some people stick to their own language. For instance, the Greek do, the Turks do. It's very difficult for them to have access in Australian affairs. For that reason, the Australians have set up ethnic broadcasting so that they get familiar with the circumstances in Australia in their own language, you see. That makes it easier. For the Dutch, it was a little bit different because most of the Dutch speak English so well that you can't make the difference between the Australian Australian and the Dutch Australian. They did quite well, as they do everywhere. For instance, in the United States and Canada, they seem to disappear into the crowd. So there was not so much need for the Dutch. But at the moment, the situation has changed a little bit. for various reasons, and that's why we find Dutch programs, language programs as well at the moment.
What are some of those reasons behind the change?
One of the reasons being they have settled. Their children are grown up, they have gone to university or they have their jobs already. The parents have enough money at the moment, they have succeeded in life, and now they want to know about the mother country.
So they're starting to speak Dutch again?
Some of them do. As soon as the children leave the home, then the parents start to talk in Dutch.
Now, you visited some of these stations. Yeah. What sort of programs do they produce?
Basically, information on Australia. They like to do as much on Australian affairs as possible. And for the rest, they'd like to do as much as Dutch culture in general. So they wanted to know Dutch history, for instance. Very important affairs in Holland, in the Netherlands. They still want to keep up with the situation in the Netherlands as far as developments are concerned. Not the political thing, not the political field. They are not interested who is the prime minister and who is the minister. That is not important. What is important is how important is Dutch culture in the world, because they are of Dutch nature.
And from Australia to Europe. Well, that's a bit of Dutch-Spanish history. Now, what on earth was that, Vin?
Well, it was the identification of a programme for Dutch holidaymakers and residents in Spain, Jonathan, under the name of Radio Club Hollandes, which stands for Dutch Radio Club.
And where were you when you made that recording then?
It was in April, and I was in Fuengirola in the south of Spain then. It's not too far from Marbella, the location of the transmitters on which this programme went out.
Now, why on earth would anyone want to broadcast a Dutch programme in Spain?
Not for ideological reasons, Jonathan. That is certainly true. The reason behind this is simply a commercial one. A few businessmen got together and thought it might be profitable to start a special program, not only for the thousands of Dutch people who are in Spain during the whole winter or all the year around, but also for the millions of Dutch people who spend their holidays on the sun-drained beaches.
And how do they go about that? What sort of things do they organise?
You can split the entire organisation into three parts. The first part is a technical one, the availability of one or more transmitters, preferably in the FM band. The second part is the production of the programs to be broadcast, and the third is, of course, the financial part, because, as I said, the whole organization was meant to be profitable to those who put money into it.
And was it difficult to find the transmitter?
No, not at all. In Spain, there exists an organization called Radio Cadena Española, which stands for Spanish Radio Chain, and this organization, which by the way is also a commercial organization, operates about 25 radio stations throughout Spain. 17 of those stations operate both in the FM and medium wave bands, and 8 of them only have an FM transmitter. Now, if you have the money, you can go to such an organization and rent transmitter time from them. And that is exactly what Radio Club Hollandes did. So every morning between 10 and 11, they were able to broadcast their Dutch language programs.
Now, was this going out on more than one transmitter at the same time?
Well, the original idea was to start a regular program on one transmitter, the one in Marbella in the south of Spain, and to expand it to more stations along the Mediterranean coast of Spain, and eventually also broadcast on stations on the Balearic Islands. But it never got any further than the one station of which I made the recordings, namely the transmitter of Radio Costa del Sol in Marbella, and only on FM, 87.6 MHz.
Well, that's the technical side. What about the programmes? What was the content like?
The bulk of the broadcasting time of 1 hour was filled with music, middle-of-the-road style, and there was a news break at the half hour, which contained, let's say, the world news, regional news, and also the weather.
Het weer in Nederland, periode met zon. Vooral in het noorden van het land kans op een bui. Het weer aan de Costa del Sol. Gisteren bedroeg de maximumtemperatuur in Malaga en Marbella 20 graden. Momenteel regent het buiten onze studio's in Marbella met een temperatuur van 16 graden.
A little of the weather forecast there. Now, how are these programs and news items produced then?
The programs arrived on tape from Holland, where they had recording facilities, obviously. But the news was read live in the studio in Marbella. The newsreader was also responsible for the preparation of the regional news, but the world news was transferred each day by telephone from Holland. This news was taped of the telephone, written out and read live.
Now, why are we talking in the past tense, Wim? Are they no longer broadcast?
No, they were operational between March 1980 and the end of April 1981. And they had to stop because of financial reasons. You see, they had calculated it would be profitable if they would be able to get 24 commercials of 15 seconds in each broadcast. Commercials like this.
Radio Club Andes, ver van huis, doch thuis.
Restaurant El Pulpo aan de boulevard in Fuengirola biedt u Duitse specialiteiten tegen.
They were clearly unable to get so many. I counted about 7 or 8 commercials in the programs that I heard. On top of that, all of a sudden, the rent of the transmitter was raised drastically to about 140,000 pesetas, so it became impossible to make the organization profitable. The solution is all too clear then, stop it.
And you were there in Spain to make a recording of the last broadcast, weren't you?
Yes, I was even in the studio at that time, and as you will hear, it went out with a big technical bump. The close-down message from the director was somewhat drowned by fast popular music, one of the perils of using a half-track tape on a full-track tape recorder.
Radio Club Holandes, regionaal.
Luister. Als u al in het nieuws van gisteren heeft kunnen beluisteren, zou ik vandaag enige woorden doen.
Well, finally today, let's cross to our DX reporter, Arthur Cushion. Arthur, I know that you have a sort of unique form of holiday radio with you in New Zealand, whereby groups can set up temporary stations. Isn't that right?
Yes, Jonathan, you're right. There are no foreign language broadcasts for tourists within New Zealand, but the Broadcasting Tribunal does issue special short-term licences in December and January at holiday resorts. These stations are generally restricted to 100 watts of power, and most of them operate 24 hours a day. Recently, these have been at the Bay of Islands, at Thames, Taupo, Kapiti, Picton, and Tiano. And then we have stations operating for special festivals. Recently, we had a rural radio on for a week, and the Queenstown Winter Festival, our main ski resort, will have two stations operating through from July 25 to August 9. 4YQ of Radio New Zealand and 4XQ of Radio Otago. Both of these are repeaters in Queenstown, but during that period they are allowed to take their own individual programs from Queenstown itself. Now to our DX news, all times GMT, frequency and kilohertz. In Anguilla, Caribbean Beacon on 1610 kilohertz has been heard here in southern New Zealand, closing at 0400 GMT. Generally continuous gospel programming up to 0400. They identify as operating on 690, 1610 and 100 MHz FM. Australia. Radio Australia's new program Spectrum, which will be compared by Dick Speckman, will be on the air every first Sunday of the month. The first broadcast is July 5. The times of the transmission are 0612, 0810, 1612, 2112 and on Mondays at 0112. That's the times for the new Radio Australia program for shortwave listeners, Spectrum, and will be compared by Dick Speckman, formerly of DX Jukebox on Radio Netherlands, and carried on the usual Radio Australia frequencies. Bolivia. During our midwinter, we're having excellent reception of 60 meter stations during our afternoon. On 4468, we hear Radio Movina around 0500. On 4697, Radio Riberalta has been heard closing at 0450. On 4730, Radio Ambavura, this one closes at 0420 and has the Colonel Bogey March. On 4945, Radio Ilamani, this one closing at 0410. On 6025, Radio Ilamani, also heard opening at 1000 and announcing as La Voice de Bolivia. And finally, on 6105, Radio Panamericana opens at 10:30. Chile, Radio Nacional in Santiago, 9550, heard on Mondays with sports programming at 0400. Colombia, on 4817, Gutapura, this one heard with music programs at 0930, 1000 announcement and animal noises heard as an identification. On 5040, Radio Cinco, heard with full identification at 0500. In Galapagos, on 4810, heard closing at 0415 by Stephen Grenier in Invercargill. Moving over to Europe and Greece, broadcasting in English and Greek to Australia and New Zealand, 0900 to 0950, two new frequencies, 15250 and 17895. Athens also heard 0200 to 0350 on 9650, English at 0345, but some interference from the Voice of America. Papua New Guinea, some major frequency changes here. 2428 kHz has replaced 3905 for Radio Manus. 3395 replacing 2410 for Radio East Highland, and 3905 replacing 2428, and that one is for Radio New Ireland. Those are three frequency switches for Papua New Guinea. Philippines, Radio Veritas Asia, broadcasting in English on 9535. New frequency heard with English, 1130 to 1200. The overall transmission time is 0930 to 1605.
Arthur Cushion, and that's all we have time for in this week's programme. I'll be back next Tuesday with Shortwave Feedback, and a week today with another media network. For the moment, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the media network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.